Hello and welcome back to Fishnets and Philosophy. This is your host, Mix Bell Marigan, and once again we are continuing the exploration into the question, why horror? Where each week myself and a different guest try to unpack the question. So before we jump into the discussion, I'm joined by Miriam, and if you could just kind of introduce yourself, like say your kind of connection to horror is, and anything else that you'd like to kind of plug about yourself.
Well, hi, it's so nice to be here. My name is Miriam. I'm an author of children's and YA literature. Actually, my connection to horror is that I just really love it. I'm not hosting a podcast or writing stuff about it. Not even my books are horror, but I consume a lot of horror.
Brilliant. Amazing. Well, that's the best type of person to have on to talk about horror is someone who loves horror. And I think that's the one thing about being someone who is a fan of horror films. We all love it at such a heightened passion, like more so than anyone. Like, you don't get the same thing with rom-com fans that you do with like horror fans. We're very passionate.
Yes.
Perfect. So the first question I always like to kind of kick off this discussion with, because I'm always fascinated to hear what the answer is for each different guest that comes on. But I want to know for yourself, what's the first horror film that you remember watching? And then slightly adjacent to that, because sometimes the answers can be different, what's the first horror film that you watched and then it made you kind of go, oh, I'm a fan of this stuff? Like, it made you realize I like horror movies. So yeah, I'd like to know what that is for you.
I've been thinking about this, and I think the first horror movie I watched was Gremlins. When I was about 10 years old, I remember my sister had swimming lessons on Wednesday afternoons, and then my mom had to take her and I was home alone. And there was this TV channel that for some reason broadcasted horror movies in the afternoon.
Interesting yeah. Choice. Pre-watershed horror movies.
Well, it was 1990, so I don't know, maybe thought differently about horror back then, I don't know. But yeah, so I watched Gremlins and I thought, I think I might like this. And then the next horror movie I remember was watching Tremors. And I loved that so much. And I was like, yes, I'm going to need to watch so many more of these movies.
Brilliant. And two kind of like great, like almost like gateway horror films as well, like really kind of easily accessible films. Like, you know, they're the ones that launch franchises, so it's a good like starting point. But also, like, you know, as you said, you watched Gremlins when you were 10, and even Tremors as well is one that younger audiences can kind of watch as well. Like, you know, it's not like you're 8 years old sitting down to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, these are very much more easier accessible films. And then sometimes that is how someone enters horror. Like, that's my favorite thing about this kind of first question, because like I found, like as I've been talking to each guest, that every horror fan seems to either be, they've been introduced to horror because like they've had like a parental figure or an older sibling that's been like their guiding hand, that's kind of like, here, I'm gonna take your hand and introduce you to all these fabulous films. Or it's someone who just happens into it, or they've come from a conservative family, or like, you're not allowed to watch these films, and it's a rebellious act. So yeah, I always love how everyone has their own different entryway into horror. So I want to spin it off from that, because this is one that I always think, it's again, it differs from person to person. But I want to know, when you're watching horror films, Do you like kind of have, especially as someone who writes, YA literature and children's literature that aren't in the horror genre, like I wonder when you're watching horror films, do you have kind of like clear delineations, like clear lines, as in on one side, this is horror, on the other side, it's not? Or for you, is it kind of more flux and fluid? I want to know what that is for yourself.
Yeah, I think it's more fluid. I just want to be entertained by horror. That's basically it. And sometimes I watch a horror movie that's really scary, and that's like, that does something to me, and I'm like, I'm really enjoying that. And sometimes it's just for fun. And yeah, but I did have nightmares as a child, like from some horror movies. Like I remember watching Critters, and it gave me nightmares for months.
Interesting, especially as like that's like almost like a sister child to Gremlins. Like they're very
I know,
similar.
Right? Yeah, but then again, like the first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire gave me nightmares as well. So I don't know what triggers that in my mind.
Well, in fairness, it is a Sam Raimi directed movie, so you know, I think that makes sense. Like, and the Green Goblin and Willem Dafoe's performance is like leaning into those type of horror esque kind of styling, so yeah, that makes sense to me. But yeah, I think I love that as well, that you know certain horror fans, because not everyone will have nightmares from watching horror. Some people can watch like the most objectively kind of grotesque or scary horror films and it's just nothing, there's no response, whereas other people, it can even be like a super not actually on paper scary film, but will still, something will be affected in it. Like, this is something I've said a good few times on my podcast now, and it's going to be a story I'll always tell. But for me, the film that really had like an impact and caused like permanent nightmares was the American remake, The Grudge. So basically, I was 12 when I saw that, and probably a bit too young for that, but basically I'll partially blame my father in the sense that we were going to the cinema, and me and my dad have always been cinema buddies, and the rest of my family go to their movies, and we were supposed to be seeing Alien versus Predator. My dad got the dates wrong and then looked at the movie poster and goes, oh, that's starring your one from Buffy. This movie should be fine. And we go in for The Grudge, and I think I spent about 85%, if not more, of that film just kind of like cowering in a ball between like the seats, like in the on the floor, and my dad just kept leaning down to me, you do know we can leave. And I don't know if I've just been someone who's grown up in late stage capitalism, I was kind of like, no, you've spent money, we can't leave. So I've scarred myself that now, even what, 15 more, actually more years, eight, like a good number of years later, math is not my strong suit, a good number of years later, I can't sleep if my wardrobe is open because of one scene in that film. So that was
I totally get that. Yeah,
exactly. But that's something that I find so fascinating about us as horror fans, is that we will be scarred, we will be like affected by these films, but we still seek them out. And I find that so intensely fascinating, because like usually with anything else, like if you have some form of a negative reaction, you're kind of like, nope, that's it for me. No more of that. Whereas with horror movies, we come back for more.
But I read an article that said it's actually quite healthy to be scared, and scared by things like books or movies, because it kind of prepares you for if something bad happens in real life.
Interesting. And that, I think I've like seen similar kind of like research studies and stuff like that, and that makes sense to me, because like I guess when you're watching a horror movie, there is that degree of separation that you kind of know it will end after a certain amount of time, that it's also, you hope, not real, like that you're not watching a snuff film, that it's an actual production. But it's that degree of separation, and I guess like, yeah, it probably is healthy to kind of like experience, to go through the emotions of anxiety, to go through the fear, to go from feeling it to your body getting through it. Yeah, I can imagine it almost being a cathartic or therapeutic experience, in the sense that you allow your body to sit with the emotion. Because like a lot of the times in daily life, we, because again, late stage capitalism, we don't have time to really kind of focus on ourselves. We don't acknowledge our emotions, or we don't sit with them. We kind of just go, hey, that's an emotion, I'm not gonna actually kind of deal with it now. And it builds up in our body. But that was a random tangent, but I liked it. Thank you.
Sorry, I have ADHD. I go in all directions.
It's brilliant. I love it. It makes the conversation more rich, and it's not just going through the questions. So thank you. And yes, if there's anything else that your brain just goes, ooh, something to say, say it, we'll jump from there. I love these type of conversations. So yes, thank you again. But this is another one, kind of slightly spinning from it, because as you said, when you are watching horror, you know, sometimes you're watching something that will scare you. Sometimes you're seeking something that's just going to be a fun entertainment time. Like for yourself, I want to know, do you have any favorite subgenres of horror? And more particularly, why are they your favorites? Like, as in, is there something you're deliberately seeking out or getting from a subgenre?
I think my favorite subgenre are creature features.
Mm-hmm.
I just love anything with sharks. I'm down for that. And things like Crawl, I loved. I don't know why. Well, I'm obsessed with the ocean. Maybe that's it. I'm not scared of it. So it's kind of like those movies are scary, but not too scary for me.
Interesting. Yeah, I know what you mean. And also, I also have an intense love for like any of the shark films, like even like the objectively terrible shark films. I'm just like, if it has a shark in it, I am going to watch it, and I will have some form of a good time.
Oh yeah, me too. I've seen The Meg 3 times.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I love that. That's fantastic. I think what you're one of the first people I've heard say I've seen The Meg 3 times, and I think that's brilliant.
No one likes it.
They are just purists. Like they're just afraid to enjoy entertainment. But then I also say this as someone who like unilaterally adores and loves Ghost Shark, which is one of the like objectively on paper terrible films, but I just love it so much, and I recommend it to everyone. So yes.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Well, you have to, and let me know what you think.
I will. Yeah, sure.
But yes, it's not a spoiler because it's in the title, but essentially a shark gets killed and its ghost then haunts the town and is like, it's almost like a slasher, and it's basically like just killing off townspeople in the most ridiculous ways, because as it's a ghost and it's not corporeal, it can appear in any form of water. So it's
that
very inventive.
That sounds awesome. I'm loving it already.
Great. Well, then that I don't like to assign homework, but that is my homework. Watch okay. Ghost Shark and let me know what you think, because there's more fans of this film, the world is a better place in my mind. But so creature features are one that you love, which makes sense if Gremlins is one of your first films, and then Tremors as well. Mm-hmm. So I think when it comes to horror fans, we do whatever films are formative in our horror watching experience end up becoming ones that we return to, either films themselves or those genres. But are there any other ones that you would be a returning fan of, any other subgenres?
I do like haunted houses.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Stuff like that. I especially love seeing those at the cinema.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I don't like the idea of having to watch that at home and having like ghosts in my house.
Yes, that's actually a very clever strategy of going,
when you watch them at the cinema, you leave the cinema, you go home, and you're fine.
Yeah, because you have that time to kind of allow it, again, the emotions to leave your body. But no, perfect. But that's also one of my favorite ones as well. But it's interesting that it's like both creature features and like kind of haunted houses or kind of ghostly kind of films that you're a fan of, because I think like those two kind of subgenres are like really good ones for, I guess, dealing with different forms of like human emotion and anxiety and stuff like that. Like, yes, like all horror deals with the same types of, like, you know, what happens if a person is put in this situation? But I've always found that creature features and like kind of ghost films are the best kind of subgenres for really tackling those type of existential nuances. So yeah, they're two good subgenres. I like that. I can understand being a returning fan of both of those. I like that one. So spinning from that, and this is like kind of a slight kind of complete 180 of a question, but I think it's one that's always an interesting conversation. But I want to know, when it comes to horror films, and I suppose actually it applies to literature as well, as someone who's a writer and an author, but how do you feel about like censorship? Like, do you think there's a line on what's kind of like acceptable, as in this can be represented, portrayed, this can be written about, and then beyond that line it's a no? Or are you more in the camp of art is art and no censorship at all? Like, I want to know what you think about that.
Yeah, I feel two different ways about that, actually. Because as an author, I'm like, no, censorship's bad. Like, I should be able to make, you know, any kind of art I want. And then as a viewer or as a reader or whatever, sometimes I'll be like, should we be watching this? Should I be reading this? So, yeah, I don't know. It's quite hard, actually, because the idea that, you know, people are banning books and stuff, I'm so against that. But I always feel like, how should I put this? Like, I want like my leftist books or my queer books to be out in the world.
Yeah.
And you know, but if I, you know, if I'm on that side, I should probably say, well, then all the conservative bullshit should be out there too. And I don't agree to that.
Yeah, I know. It's like it is that tricky one. Like, I'm always like, I think it is like, actually, I like how you were going to mention, like, you know, the leftist books and the queer books, because like, I feel like this is a dilemma that only people who are kind of like left-leaning face. Like, I think anyone who's like staunchly right-wing conservative doesn't have a dilemma around censorship. They just have their opinion and that's it. Whereas people who are left-wing and liberal, and like, we are more socially conscious, and we kind of like, we struggle with it, because like, we're both in the camp of no, like, you know, everything is permissible, because if you start saying you can censor, that leads to banning books, or it leads to certain American states banning saying the word gay, you know. So like, that stems from censorship. But then we're also, but there are some harmful and problematic ideas that shouldn't be out in the world. So it's a tricky balanced one. So I think there is no easy answer. And when it comes particularly to film, like, this was an interesting kind of like discussion that came up with a previous guest, but like, say, talking about in particular, like the film Cannibal Holocaust or other types of extreme horror, like Cannibal Holocaust as a specific example, actually has in the film like real footage of some form of like a sea turtle or a turtle being slaughtered, like, so that's in the film. And this is a very, you know, contested film about whether it should exist or not, because it's like, instead of it being graphic fake, it's an actual turtle, so it's like real animal death,
right?
And what came up in that discussion was where's the line between this is a fictional film that happens to include real animal death versus a documentary filmmaker going into, say, some indigenous tribe or somewhere where, and just literally documenting what actually happens. Like, where's the line in that? And I don't know. There's no easy answer. And it's so like,
so complicated.
It is so complicated. Like, I think in general, myself, I tend to veer more on the side of there shouldn't be censorship, but there we should kind of like critically engage with what we're watching in the sense that, you know, try and examine what is the intent for this being on screen or for this being written about. Like, I think that's where we should lie, as in what was the filmmaker's intent and stuff like that.
Yeah, but then again, once your work is out in the world, does your intent really matter?
Which is actually leans into one of the questions that I have, which is, again, intensely like something that fascinates me so much. But I want to know, do you think like the concept of the death of the author applies to horror films? Because you actually set that up perfectly. Thank you. But because that's something that is also is always on my mind, in the sense that, does a filmmaker's intent matter? Or like, as in, once they've made it, it's in the world, and therefore what their vision or their intent, whatever it was, is actually completely almost null and void compared to what a viewer's interpretation of it is. But then kind of on the flip side, if their intent, their vision no longer applies, then is accountability removed? As in, if they, as part of their film, show, say, some form of problematic imagery or visuals, if their intent is no longer applied, can they be held accountable for what they've put on film? So I want to know what you think about that. That was a rambling question, but I want to know what you think.
I think, you know, I think when you're making something, if you're writing a book or making a movie, you always have an intention. Mm-hmm. And when you're finished making it, you hope that intention comes across. And I think if you did a very good job, then it will.
Mm-hmm.
But if you didn't do a good job and people are interpreting your work wildly different than from what you had in mind, then, you know, there's nothing, not really anything you can do about it. But if you're called out for something problematic, like, I'm a white person, I might accidentally put something racist in my book because I didn't know it was racist, because I had never, you know, that could happen. If I'm called out for that, then I should be held accountable, and I should say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that, and I will do better. And if my book is reprinted, I will make sure that that isn't there anymore. So you should be held accountable. So you can't really kill the author altogether.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a very nuanced one. Like, I think it's, and actually just when you're saying, like, even when you're saying if someone, you know, misinterprets the vision, like, that, like, even makes it more, like, complicated, because, as you said, you know, if a filmmaker or an author does a good job at, you know, portraying what their intent vision is, sometimes that doesn't even matter, because at the end of the day, everyone who's engaging with art is doing it from their own subjective experience.
True.
So, you know, even if you were on paper good at actually delivering what your vision or intent was, someone still may not pick up on it and misinterpret it. But then it's, and is that a misinterpretation? Fine. That's what, yeah, exactly.
It's just their interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because I wrote a book once, and someone who had, I think, bipolar disorder had picked up so many things from that book. And she was like, wow, this main character has bipolar. And I was like, what? No, she doesn't. And then, you know, I thought, no, if she thinks that character is bipolar, then that's fine. If she gets something from that, you know, I don't have anything to say about it anymore, because I'm finished writing it. So, yeah,
exactly. And actually, that's a brilliant kind of example of, you know, what someone's interpretation is, because if we're looking at specifically from a queer lens, so many horror films have queer readings applied to them that might not have like been made with a queer reading in mind, because we as queer horror fans are like, especially when we're watching films, you know, from of certain decades and certain eras, you know, you're like looking for some form of representation on screen. You want to see yourself represented. And for so many years, the only representation that queer people actually got was like, you know, forms of violence or forms of negativity. So sometimes we'll read positive interpretations that might not necessarily have been there. And who is to say that we shouldn't do that or that we're wrong? Like, you know, because someone who's not queer doesn't know what a queer experience is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's all fine. Like, if people want to read something queer in a movie, and, you know, lots of the times it's there if you just look. And, you know, the filmmaker might have... Well, I was actually listening to Horror Queers.
Yep, great podcast.
And they did
as well.
An episode on Tremors.
Oh, cool.
And they're like, oh, yeah, and the two main guys, they're like, oh, the domesticity, and they're definitely gay or bi or whatever. And I obviously never picked up on that because I hadn't seen that movie since I was a child. So, and I rewatched it and I was like, yeah, they're so right. And then, you know, I can imagine then there's people that be like, no, they're just very good friends. And, you know, that's fine. But, you know, you have to let other people think that they're not just friends, they're actually gay or whatever.
Exactly. And also that whole of they're just good friends. It's like something that like queer, it's almost like a running joke now within like the queer community, because like if you like, and it's like when you actually kind of sit down and think, you know, about it properly, it's like really sad and angering. But the simple fact that so much of human history has essentially been dictated by cisgender straight white men, that's why so many examples of what now, if we look now again, we are obviously looking at it with a modern lens, so, you know, taking that into account, but so many like examples of relationships or friendships like are clearly on paper queer people that existed in the past.
Yeah, for sure.
But because those histories were put down on paper by these cisgender straight old white men, they didn't notice that, or they deliberately ignored it. Like it's either like a not it's either an annoyance or a deliberate like act of hate. But it is frustrating. And I think that's why at the end of the day, if a queer person watches a movie and says, hey, that character's queer, someone who isn't queer can't correct them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you think that character's queer, then he or she is queer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, there can be like, which is what I love, you know, this is my favorite thing about critically engaging with art is the discussions that come from it. You know, queer people aren't a monolith, you know, so there could be one queer person who watches a horror film and goes, hey, that character is queer. There's another queer person who watches it and doesn't see it. And there can be really interesting, nuanced discussions that come from that. But yeah, at the end of the day, someone's interpretation can exist at the same time as whatever the filmmaker's intent was. Like, I don't think you can say one is more important than the other. I think they just exist at the same time. But stemming, kind of jumping off from the death of the author question, because I do think it overlaps a lot and it stems from it. But I want to know what your kind of feelings are around the whole art versus artist debate. Like, do you think that, say that there is, for example, sticking specifically to horror cinema, if you take like a Roman Polanski or a Victor Salva, people who like have objectively on paper like had charges against them or they've been convicted of some form of terrible, heinous crimes, do you think that someone can separate the art and still engage with the art without supporting that artist. Like, I want to know what you think, because I'm, again, always, it's hard to plant my flag down in one side or the other, and I'm always interested what other people's perspectives are.
Yeah, I find that really, like, I don't want to support those people. Like, I probably, like, it, maybe it depends on what someone has done, I guess, or something, you know, but I wouldn't buy DVDs or whatever, Blu-rays from very problematic filmmakers.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you already own something and you really love that movie, should you never watch it again? I don't know. Like, maybe not go on social media and say, oh, I watched this for the 10th time, but just, you know, do it in the privacy of your own home and enjoy that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think when it comes from that, like, stance, I think ultimately, and this is probably where most of the time I end up coming back to when I have this, like, constant discussion with myself, but I think ultimately it's like there's a difference between engaging with the art and commercially supporting the artist.
Yeah.
You know, so as in, as you said, if you already own a copy of a book or a movie or something like that, like, no one can say that you're immoral or you support that artist by continuing to engage with the art as a piece of art. But to take, for example, going to more on the literature side of things, but she who shall not be named, the creator of the Harry Potter books, if you were to go, yeah, you know what, I'm still going to buy the new Harry Potter game, that's commercially supporting someone who's problematic. And to me, that's kind of you going, yeah, they may be a bit shitty, but I'd rather support them so I can play this new thing or engage with this new thing. So I think there's a difference between I'm enjoying the art for the art's sake versus I'm going to continue commercially supporting someone. So I do think there is a slight difference there.
Yeah. And, well, she who must not be named, no one should ever support her ever again.
Yep. You know what? Fuck it. This is very much a podcast that has no time for Rowling. So
exactly.
anyone who's a fan of Rowling, I don't want you listening to my podcast because I'm a queer trans person. So if you like her, you don't like me. So you can fuck off. So yes, I'm going to say that. I have a small listenership, so I can. I don't have sponsors yet.
Even if you had, like, sponsor, shouldn't support her either. It's like,
yes, I agree. If I ever do get to a large enough listenership to end up having sponsors, I'm only going to, like, you know, get sponsors on that, like, you know, have the same values as mine. So that's also something I'm very much firm stance on. I'm trying to think, is this like a complete tangent? Well, it's the next question that's on my mind. But this is something that is intensely on my mind a lot. But to me, it feels like across the board, a lot of the kind of like media, films, TV, in a way, are becoming like very sanitized and almost like desexualized in a way that even if there's like nudity or sex, it's not sexy. There's this weird kind of sanitization that's occurring. But it feels like horror as a genre is kind of rejecting that or refusing to go down that route. And I want to know what you think. Do you think that this is something that's occurring? Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm always interested to see what other people's perspectives are. But what do you think on this? Do you think horror is still the rebellious genre of film that like is rejecting kind of mainstream tropes? I want to know what you think.
I think it might be because I watched X. And you know, that's not all the things you said.
Yeah, it that very much is not sanitized.
Yeah,
it is
sanitized.
Yeah. Oh yes, that was one of my favorite films this year. I thought
Ty
mine
West, too. I loved it so much.
It was so good, and it's actually like it was like the perfect, like, it was the film that I just was like, it was like, has Ty West just like looked into my brain and kind of been like, what movie will Belle like? This is it. Because like, I've always thought that horror and adult films, porn, are kind of two genres that have always been kind of looked down upon from everywhere else. So I thought it was so cool that Ty West was like, you know what, I'm gonna make a horror movie about people making porn. I was like, oh my god, that's so clever, it's so good. Yeah. but yes continue though.
I've lost my train of
thought. You were saying that X like wasn't like kind of supported my idea that horror isn't going the kind of sanitization route.
Yes, and then you know there's always like the maybe traditional slashers with the final girls and lots of boobs and I don't know.
Yeah, no, definitely horror from the 80s and like, you know, pre-scream slashers definitely leaned heavily on we're going to show a lot of nudity. Also from like a very kind of specific, this is a man that made this movie. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
But also, you know, that never bothered me that much because being bisexual, I'm into
boobs.
Yeah.
It's just, and like, yeah, and I think there is like, and I think X actually is a perfect example of being able to like, because I don't think, like, even though it was obviously these characters are making porn, I did feel that Ty West like wasn't being objectifying with the imagery on screen. Like, it was very much like celebratory in the sense that it was like, no, these like characters, like what they're doing is like of merit and of value. So like, you know, like just also just Mia Goth, like just and fantastic, phenomenal in that film. But the way certain shots were done were very much like, no, we're not being leery or lecherous. We're like kind of going, human bodies are sexy, so we're gonna highlight that.
Yeah, it was such a pretty movie, and it was so good. And I never really, even though they were making porn, I never really felt that they were objectified or something like that. And even, you know, there's the old couple having sex, and I read some discussions like, was it ageist? Was it supposed to be like this? People being disgusted by it, and I didn't interpret it like that.
No, I didn't either. And so I'm always puzzled by those readings. Yeah, like to me, I just read it as this is just a couple that like have finally found, like they've finally found the ability. Like, I do think it's hilarious that they were able to kind of like find the ability to reconnect again because they've been killing people. Like, I kind of loved the kind of hilarity of that. It was like, so the best way to get your rocks off is to murder a few teenagers making porn. Got it. That's the message. Brilliant. But I do think it was really clever. And again, I'll just have a small brief current tangent of X and then we'll go back to kind of the broader discussion. But I do think it was like very clever from Ty West, because I thought it was both that specifically what was happening with the characters, but it was also kind of like him going, if you have a negative reaction to this, that says more about you than what's on screen. Because as a society, we are like, the images we get that aging is bad, that you can't be sexy after a certain age. Even if we actually look at like the porn categories, it's either teen or like, you know, certain like MILF, that's it. But it's also MILFs somehow are still in their late 20s, early 30s with children the same age as them. Porn doesn't make sense these days. Narratively, it doesn't make sense.
God, I'm too old to be a MILF now.
Yeah, it's yeah. I'm just like, and everyone's a step relation now. So that's like, yeah. this is slowly veering from horror podcast to porn podcast. No, I'll get us back on track.
Yeah.
I do love these tangents. this is one that I would like to see what your kind of perspective on it is. But this is something that I see a lot on kind of like Twitter and other forms of social media. And the more I've talked to people on this podcast, the more I'm realizing, oh, there's actually people in the world who think like this. But it's this, like, I see it all the time that someone will say, certain horror film wasn't a good horror film because I was not scared. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think that a horror film needs to be scary to be considered a good or effective horror film? Like, what do you think on that?
No, I don't think that. Because everyone is scared by different things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can find something incredibly scary and you'd be like, what? This is not scary. And then still you can find it a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is maybe something, other horrifying thing that might shock you or but not scare you. Like,
mm-hmm.
Have you seen Speak No Evil? Probably not.
Speak No Evil? No, I don't think I have.
No, it's a Dutch-Danish movie. Okay. It's in English mostly because, you know, Dutch people and Danish people have to communicate in English. But it's not scary,
mm-hmm.
like for most of the movie. It's there's tension.
Mm.
And it's a little weird, but it's not really. Well, I didn't think it was scary. And then the ending is really, really horrifying.
Okay.
So I would say that's a movie that is a very good horror movie, but not particularly scary.
Mm-hmm,
because
yeah.
There's not, like, you don't go home and look over your shoulder to see if there's a killer there, or you don't look under your bed for ghosts or whatever after you're watching it. It's just, yeah, it's a whole different kind of movie. And I think there's plenty of movies out there that are like that.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I definitely, like, maybe it's just like the caliber of guests I'm getting on, but everyone's also been saying the same thing that no, that's just stupid. Like, you know, horror is subjective. Everyone has, you know, everyone is scared from different things. So I like that everyone has kind of been saying the same, because, like, that's what I think. So yes, good job me. But but yes, because everyone's scared by different things. And, like, yes, like you said, that something can be not necessarily scary and still be a well-made horror film. And in a similar vein, you can have, like, horror films that, like, maybe aren't that well-made, but can be scary or can elicit of a response.
Yeah.
Like, so it's, like, that's why I just never understand that it didn't scare me, so it wasn't good. And just, like, well, define good. What scares you? Like, there's, like, there's so much nuance to that type of reaction. But yes, definitely, that's where I think as well, that it's subjective, everyone has different experiences. Like, you know, for me, like, the one type of, like, it's not a subgenre, but if it occurs in a horror film, like body horror, that's something that just gets me every time. Like, so I recently rewatched for the umpteenth time, and it was a first watch for my dad, but Naya Da Costa's Candyman, I recently rewatched that, and just the body horror in that film just squicks me out. Like, it just, I just, like, feel like my body just contorts. I'm just like, oh no, like, I can't, like, it's so intense and uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
But, like, if I watch a movie that doesn't have body horror and I don't have that type of visceral reaction, doesn't mean it was a bad movie or that it didn't have an effect. And I think at the end of the day, once a film has had some form of an effect from you, that means it's done its job. Because whether it's a book or a film, like, kind of the purpose of a story is to elicit a response. So whether that response is fear, laughter, like, whatever it is, that to me means it's done some form of a good job. Like, if you kind of read something or watch something and literally have no emotional reaction or physiological reaction, then it's like, then what's the point of that thing existing? Because if it didn't elicit a response of any kind. But yeah, so I like that you're also of the same opinion that nope, people are subjective. And speaking of people being subjective, kind of like as a kind of like a last kind of like major topic before we kind of start to wind down, but this is also something now, again, maybe it's just toxic online small communities, I don't know, but there is this kind of subset of horror fan that like is always saying there's no good horror anymore, it's not like it used to be made in the, you know, in the past. And I want to know what you think, where that attitude stems from. Like, me personally, I think it's very much I'm a straight white man and I'm not in this. So yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's just very conservative straight white males speaking their mind on the internet.
Yeah, and it definitely overlaps with, say, like comic book communities as well. There's just like a certain type of, yeah, it's just like, I'm not happy that I'm not the focus of this story, and I'm gonna throw my toys out of the pram.
I can't relate if the story is about a black woman. Like, well, listen, black women have to have had to relate to white men for decades.
Exactly. Or even the same, like, and this is like always like, you know, what I feel as well, with someone be like, oh, this is the romance movie about lesbians or about gay men or whatever, I can't relate. And it's just like, queer people have been like forced to try and relate to romantic stories about straight people since eternity. And it's also, it's not like straight romance movies are no longer being made. They're still the main demographic. So shut up.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many, like, there's so many films and comic books and other things that they can choose from. Like, let us have the one film that's about queer people.
Exactly. Let us have our one token thing that exists, like, while you have everything else at the buffet. We just want our little corner. Leave us alone.
Yeah, wasn't that like the reaction to the Resident Evil series on Netflix?
Yeah.
I haven't seen many reactions, but I think there were some men
it's,
who were like,
It's kind of just been an overwhelmingly negative reaction. And actually,
I loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was really good fun. Like, and also, it's really annoying that it's been cancelled. Like,
I was really into it.
Yeah, I thought it was great fun. And that's actually a really interesting one, like, because it's something that I think you see in horror as well. Less so, but like, you know, obviously this is like an adaptation of a video game, so it's almost like everyone who's like fans of the video game feel like if it doesn't live up to what they have in their head, it automatically fails as a form of media. And it's just like, you need to kind of separate your own subjective expectations from what it is, like treat it as its own separate entity. And I think a lot of the times that's something that horror fans can be guilty of as well, that I see it all the time, that will be like, oh, certain film is being remade in a modern context, and certain horror fans will be like, no, this film is perfect, doesn't need to be made again. And I'm just like, your original film isn't going away, it's not being deleted from history. You can still watch and appreciate the version you love. This is just a new version, watch it with new eyes. And
yeah, exactly,
you know. And yes, sometimes remakes or reimaginations are shit, like the new the new Friday the 13th, wasn't really a fan of it, wasn't that great. No. Like, maybe because it wasn't Robert Englund, or because it was straight, we're not going to do humor, this is just going to be full horror. So yeah, I didn't think it was that great. But am I going to say that it should never have been made, or that its existence somehow means the originals have been ruined? No, because that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think like the past few years, like there's a few great horror movies that have come out, and I don't think anyone has had, you know, has to complain.
Exactly, as it, like, we genuinely are in a golden age of horror films. Like, we've got Ari Aster directing films, we've got Robert Eggers, and then we've also got more like women behind the screen, like Julia Ducournau, Coralie Fargeat. Like, there's loads of really great, interesting filmmakers making films now, and that's just all the better. Like, give us more different perspectives. That can only be a good thing, like, you know. So yes, my hope is that eventually, like, that type of attitude of there's no good horror movies anymore will kind of die away, because like there will be less kind of like, you know, boomers and less kind of straight white men that have that view, because now anyone who is like a, or at least a, well, a non-conservative straight white man is a fan of these horror films. So they'll be the people who are kind of like hopefully engaging with new horror films from diverse creators as we go forward. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so for the last question before I let you go, because we're coming up to the hour mark, and this is always one that I kind of like to close out on if I can. What are your comfort horror films? Like if you've had a bad day or a bad week and you just want to throw on a movie because you know you're going to have a good time, what are those films for you?
I like, well, I've mentioned The Meg.
Brilliant.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. Like if there's one thing that, you know, I am a firm, like, you know, I stamp my foot down, there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure. We should never be judged or shamed for what we find pleasure in. Once it's not harming someone else that doesn't want to be harmed, then we're all good.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. And then Crawl and Tremors and Happy Death Day.
Ooh, I like it. A nice one. A slasher as well, or slasher-ish.
Yeah, I like slashers as a comfort movie because I'm not really, like, I'm scared, but sometimes scared when I'm watching them, but as soon as I turn it off, I'm not anymore. So it's like, it's a good comfort movie. Like, also, if there's a little humor in it, like, Freaky.
Oh, what a film. And also, like, again, this is what you get when you get queer filmmakers making films, is that you get good representation of queer characters. But also, yes, that movie was just, Catherine Newton is just brilliant, and she played off Vince Vaughn perfectly. Like, oh yes, this is a rewatch for me.
Yeah, it's just like those kind of movies that are just like, actually, when maybe this is too much information, I don't know, but I was diagnosed with MS last year, and I couldn't watch any horror because I just couldn't, because I was kind of feeling anxious all day, every day. I couldn't watch any horror because I didn't want more of that.
Mm-hmm.
But now this year, you know, I'm fine, and I'm watching horror and it's great. There's still some movies I will never rewatch, but I like slashers for comfort, and also all the shark movies like 47 Meters Down and Uncaged and whatever.
Brilliant. Well, firstly, thank you for sharing that, and I'm glad to hear that everything's going in a more positive direction for you. That's what a brilliant note to kind of end our conversation on, is that, you know, things are looking better for you. That's really good. So before I let you go, where can people find your work and kind of find and support you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Letters to Miriam, and on Instagram at Some Kind of Miriam. People who can read Dutch can find my books in Dutch bookshops.
Brilliant. No, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation with me today there, Miriam. It was an absolute great time. You're a fabulous guest. And to my listeners, keep your eyes and ears peeled for future episodes that are releasing in this series. So thanks again.